It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, June 18. How are we doing this morning? Happy Father's Day. Hope you have some exciting plans with your dad today. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. It's better under the umbrella. And by the KPMG Women's PGA Championship taking place this coming week at the historic Baltusrol Golf Club in Springfield, New Jersey. Get your tickets now at kpmgwomenspga.com. Just back from spending 4 days at the Los Angeles Country Club, the site of the U.S. Open. And I am so excited about the final round today. I don't know about you, but oh my goodness. First, a refresher on this golf course. What a unique layout. It is really different. I mean, this course, also, it's a private oasis in the middle of Los Angeles. You wouldn't even know that it is there if you were not a golfer. And many golfers don't even know it's there. The LACC, it's very private, very exclusive, very secluded. And it's a very unique design by renowned golf architect George C. Thomas Jr., who designed it in the 20s. And then they did an extensive renovation of the North Course back in 2010. Gil Hance and golf writer and George C. Thomas's biographer, Jeff Shackelford, whom you've heard on this show before. The course plays as a par 70. Over 7,400 yards. It has five par threes, and one of those playing as short as 80 yards, which makes it the shortest par three in U.S. Open history. It played 80 yards yesterday, and it can play from anywhere from 80 to 135 yards. And two of the par threes play over 280 yards. The par three 11th played 272 yards yesterday. And then you have the guys trying to navigate the drivable par four, the sixth hole. It's a blind shot from the tee. And, you know, for the guys who choose to drive that hole, it's really difficult to keep the tee shot from rolling off the green into trouble. So most of the guys were laying up there. And then you have the downhill par three seventh, which is longer than the par four sixth. And then you have 16, 17, and 18, three of the longest holes really of any U.S. Open par fours. Yesterday, the par 4 16th played 542 yards, the par 4 17th played 520, and the par 4 18th, 494 yards. So, very tricky, very difficult golf course. Extreme elevation, wider than normal fairways for U.S. Open course, but the landing areas are sloped with a lot of fallouts. There's thick Bermuda rough, and then there are these barrancas, they call them, which are these ditches with sand and scrub bushes in them. So it requires thoughtful study, tons of local knowledge. And of course, you have the area full of, you know, Hollywood lore. You have Hugh Hefner's mansion, used to be just off the 14th hole. Lionel Richie has a mega mansion overlooking the fifth and sixth holes. Ronald Reagan was a member there. He's really only the top name of note, as the club did not want celebrities as members. So I know there's a locker with Ronald Reagan's name on it. Padraig Harrington tweeted out a picture of his locker being right next to Ronald Reagan's locker. This was the first U.S. Open hosted at LA Country Club back in 1948. The U.S. Open was played at Riviera, which was also designed by George C. Thomas. He also designed Bel Air. And those two courses, Riviera and Bel Air, of course, are much better known in L.A. than the L.A. Country Club. The USGA only sold 22,000 tickets a day due, I guess, to the compactness, the tightness of the course. Very tough to walk the golf course, not only as a golfer, but if you're a fan. And the crowds during the practice rounds, especially Monday and Tuesday, seemed very scarce. And even Matthew Fitzpatrick complained about the atmosphere there at the LA Country Club. He said, in quotes, "Very poor. It's just disappointing on the USGA side. They won a great tournament. From what I've heard, a lot of members bought tickets And that's why there's so many less people. He said, hopefully it's not the same for other U.S. Opens going forward. End of quote. All right, we'll recap. Let's see. Round one on Thursday, that was a scoring fest. Soft conditions with morning mist made the course soft and ripe for scoring. There was a 71.38 scoring average on the opening day. That's the lowest ever in an opening round of a U.S. Open. And, of course, in that round one, Ricky Fowler and Xander Schauffele carded U.S. Open record-breaking 8-under-62s. Fowler had 10 birdies and 2 bogeys, and shortly after he closed out his opening round, Schauffele carded a bogey-free 62. And in that round one, there were 37 rounds in the 60s, which was a record. And, you know, guys are just overpowering the course, but the USGA maintained that once the sun came out, the L.A. Country Club would get back to its normal bite, you know, with those firm and fast greens and fairways. And that pretty much happened Friday afternoon. The sun finally came out, the wind picked up, and the scoring showed. Ricky Fowler on Friday shot a 268. He had 8 birdies and 6 bogeys on Friday. And even though his 10 under 130 for 36 holes tied the low score for U.S. Open, it was a well-fought 2 under for Ricky on Friday, and he hung in there. And this afternoon in the final round, it will be Ricky Fowler and Wyndham Clark tied for the lead at 10 under. It looked like he would have maintained the sole lead. He was one shot ahead at 11 under as he started the 18th, but that short par putt on 18 just kind of swerved around the rim of the cup and went out. It didn't go in, obviously. He bogeyed that final hole. He shot an even par 70 yesterday. He had 2 birdies, 2 bogeys on the front, 1 birdie on the back. He drained a 69-footer for birdie on the par 4 13th. And this is the 10th time Ricky Fowler holds a 54-hole lead or co-lead on the PGA Tour, and the first time in a major. And here's a stat for you. He's only 2-for-9 in converting into victories, so hope that's not the case today for him. Wyndham Clark with an incredible approach shot to 18. He drained a 6-footer for birdie to move to 10 under there for the tie. And boy, on the 17th, Clark's tee shot landed in the hazard. He had to take a drop, a 1-stroke penalty, so he bogeyed 17, but finished strong with that birdie on 18, and good bounce back for Wyndham after that bogey. So you got Wyndham and Ricky Fowler at 10 under, one shot ahead of Rory McIlroy. And they are 3 shots ahead of Scottie Scheffler. So I guess the question is, can Ricky Fowler close the deal this afternoon, win his first major title? He's 34 years old. He's been in a slump the last several years. His ranking had dropped to 182. Last year. Then he reconnected with coach Butch Harmon, and he's had really good results this year. He's had 6 top tens, and this week he's been as sharp and as razor focused as can be. Overall, he's won 5 PGA Tour titles, but his last win was back in 2019 at the Phoenix Open. He's married now, he has a child, and boy, what a win it would be if he could close it out today. Wyndham Clark, he's 29 years old. He's from Denver, Colorado. He just won in May at the Wells Fargo. And he was saying he practiced with a member of the LA Country Club early in the week, and that local knowledge was just huge for him. And here's an interesting stat. His best finish in 6 prior major championships is tied for 75th. Wow. And he's missed the cut in his 2 previous U.S. Open starts in 2021 and last year. And here he is heading into the final round late this afternoon, tied for the lead with Ricky Fowler. Early in the week, Rory McIlroy, he canceled his pre-tournament press conference to focus on the championship and his golf. And, you know, he's always compelling in these press conferences. He's great for quotes, but he made the right move. He's had the eye of the tiger this week, and he's hoping to win his first major in 9 years. He started the 3rd round at 8 under, 2 shots behind Ricky Fowler. He is going to start late this afternoon, 1 shot behind the leaders. And yesterday, he got off to a great start. He just missed an eagle on the par five first hole. He birdied the third, bogeyed the fourth, bogeyed 13, birdied 14, ended up carding a 1-under 69. And this is the fifth time in a major he's carded three rounds in the 60s. And he has gone on to win three of the previous four of those that he's carded three rounds in the 60s. So we'll see what happens. How about Scotty Scheffler's eagle on that tough par 4 17th? That hole out on the 17th was from 196 yards. Just incredible. That eagle moved him to 6-under. And then he birdied the par 4 18th. From 22 feet, 3 inches. He shot a 268, and at 7-under, as I mentioned, he is 3 shots back. Harris English shot a plus 171. He's 4 shots back. Dustin Johnson, after a plus 1 yesterday, he's at 5-under, 5 shots back. And then you have Xander Schauffele. He had struggled from the get-go yesterday. His tee shot on that very first hole landed in a bunker on the left. He literally miffed 2 consecutive bunker shots. Boy, I fought for him there. Both shots actually landing back at him in the bunker. He ended up bogeying that first hole. Could have been a lot worse. And then on the second hole, he dropped a long bomb for a par save to get to 7-under. And after that horrendous start, he had 3 bogeys in his first 5 holes. He birdied 6, 8, 9. But then he had 3 more bogeys on the back. So he shot a plus 373. He is at 5-under. As well, and we'll start 5 shots back later this afternoon. So what a leaderboard we have. Anything can happen. Let's see. Brooks Koepka, he shot an even par yesterday. He's even for the championship. He said this week that he's not a big fan of the golf course because there are too many blind shots. Okay, Brooks, he's being honest. He also said he's won major titles on courses that he hasn't been crazy about. And, you know, surprising, the players, some of the players who did not make the cut, which was at plus 2. Phil Mickelson, he turned 53 on Friday. He missed a cut at plus 3. Jordan Spieth missed the cut at plus 3. Max Homa, who grew up 18 miles away from the Los Angeles Country Club. And he had the course record of 61 back in 2013 in the Pac-12 championship. He missed the cut at plus 4. Justin Rose, Justin Thomas, both missed the cut. JT said after his 81 on Friday that his round was humiliating and embarrassing. So, some very interesting guys did not make the cut. All right, regarding the shocking merger news that broke on Tuesday, June 6th, there's nothing really new to report at this point. We know that the Department of Justice's antitrust division informed the PGA Tour it will review the organization's proposed merger with the Saudi-funded LIV Golf. The DOJ was already conducting an investigation into professional golf involving the litigation with LIV. And this week, a motion to dismiss the lawsuits between the PGA Tour and the Saudis Public Investment Fund were filed as both parties agreed to end all antitrust litigation. So apparently the antitrust case and the PGA Tour's countersuit are finished and can never be reopened. And in other news in that area, the New York Times filed a motion to unseal the documents affiliated with the lawsuits. Last Wednesday, the PGA Tour released a statement saying that PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan is recuperating from a medical situation. And that's all we know. They have not commented on Jay's health status since that. Earlier in the week, I asked several of the players in their U.S. Open press conferences about playing amidst all the distraction that has been going on. And they all had pretty good answers, starting with John Rahm. Hey, John. All the uncertainty, being in the state of limbo, as you described, how do you not allow that to affect your game? How do you stay focused on it? You said you turned off your phone when you first heard for a couple hours, but what else do you do just to focus on your game, particularly this week?
The state, to be honest, I think a little bit in my case is perspective. No matter what happens, whether I agree with it or not, thanks to the PGA Tour, they give me a platform to play golf at the highest level. And after taking advantage of that possibility I'm in a situation where my family and my kids won't have to struggle financially ever. And I don't know how many generations I can help if I do it properly. So I'm in a very high state of privilege in this world. I can do what I want. I can do what I love for a living. I have a blast every single day, even though I get mad on the golf course every once in a while. And when I start with that point of view, no matter what happens, I can only be thankful to what's going on. And if things change, things change. I mean, I'm just, I'll have to adapt to the situation. And, you know, if I have to make some decisions on what's going on forward, I'll have to make some decisions. But it's just not, at the end of the day, I'm extremely privileged, whether the PGA Tour and LIV Golf align or not, or who plays and who hides who or who likes who, it doesn't really matter, right? I'm happy with what I am in my life. And every day in the morning when I look at my kids, I'm even more blessed in that sense. So it's an easier way to forget about what's going on when I look at it that way, right? I can see where I came from in Spain, especially every time I see my parents. I remember where we came from and where I'm at. And to be honest, all those possible issues seem like a very, very small issue compared to other things in the world. So, yeah, I just consider myself very privileged and, if anything, thankful to be where I am.
Brooks Koepka. You've always been able to maintain your focus despite what's going on around you. What's the secret to doing that?
I've said it. It's the more chaotic things get, the easier it gets for me. Everything starts to slow down, and I'm able to focus on whatever I need to focus on while everybody else is dealing with distractions, worrying about other things.
Is that the key reason why you think you peak at these majors?
I think there's a few of them, but I think it's definitely one of them. I enjoy the chaos.
Colin Morikawa. With everything going on off the course, all the distractions, all the noise, how do you stay focused with your golf game this week?
I don't know. I've been pretty good about just taking myself out of everything that's going on. I mean, it is what it is. I can't control what's going to happen. None of us can, no matter what we write up or what we say. So, this was a major that I cared about when I was like in college, and I knew about, you know, LACC hosting a US Open. I didn't know where my path was going to be. I didn't know if I was going to be on tour, if I was going to have to qualify for this in right 4 years. This is pretty much 4 years since I've turned pro. I didn't know where I was going to be, but this is the one that I wanted to make it and the one I wanted to be at just because it is home for me. So this week means so much. It always will be. It'll always be really special. But that's just the added bonus and added fuel for me to just go out there and put everything I have and not waste my energy on anything else.
All right, coming up, Andy Bassett, Executive Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer for Travelers. He'll join us to talk about the upcoming Travelers Championship. And as you know, many of the world's best golfers will tee up at the Travelers Championship June 21st to the 25th. John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, 2022 champion, Xander Schauffele, and many more. The Northeast's only PGA Tour event will feature next-level competition, next-level thrills, next-level excitement. For tickets and information, visit TravelersChampionship.com and be sure to catch all the next-level action.
Now more than ever, you need the skills and credentials to help adapt to the growing demands of today's ever-changing job market. At Thomas Edison State University, our online degrees are designed to help you advance and lead. Whether you're a working adult looking to finish your degree or want to pursue your graduate education to enhance your resume, TESU can help you increase your marketability and further your career. Take your next step with Thomas Edison State University, the leader in online education. Visit tesu.edu.
The first ever Mazda CX-90 is absolutely incredible. This is the perfect three-row SUV packed with tons of safety features like lane keep assist, smart brake support, and a 360-degree camera that makes driving this three-row SUV easy to drive. It is thoughtfully designed around the driving experience. The Mazda CX-90 is powerful and responsive. It's unlike any other three-row SUV I've driven. Visit your local Mazda dealer or MazdaUSA.com and schedule your test drive.
What you watch depends on what kind of mood you're in. Sometimes you're craving comedies like Friends or South Park, and sometimes you're more into dramas like HBO's Succession and House of the Dragon. There's also cooking shows like Chopped and Beat Bobby Flay, and even movies like The Lord of the Rings and Shazam! Fury of the Gods. Well, Max is the streaming destination that has the best of entertainment for whatever mood you're in, anytime. And plans start at as little as $9.99 a month.
Max, the one to watch. Subscription required. Visit max.com.
You say you'll never join the Navy. That living on a submarine would be too hard. You'd never power a whole ship with nuclear energy. Never bring a patient back to life. Or play the national anthem for a sold-out crowd. Joining the Navy sounds crazy. Saying never actually is. Start your journey at Navy.com. America's Navy, forged by the sea.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf on this Father's Day. Hope you're having a great morning so far. And the Travelers Championship is the only PGA Tour event on the calendar in the Northeast, and it takes place this coming week in Cromwell, Connecticut, outside of Hartford. And joining me now to talk about it is Andy Bassett, Executive Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer of Travelers. Hey, Andy, welcome to Talkin' Golf.
Hi, Ann. How are you doing?
Good. I'm sure you've been glued to the set to watch the U.S. Open.
Oh, my gosh. It's just unbelievable. Every year we do this, though, and then we have our charter that comes out to bring all the top players in the world. And, you know, this year, it's just so excited. I'm so excited. Okay, when I saw you at the Masters, I was excited then about being designated and about having, you know, we've ended up with 70 of the top 77 players in the world going to be with us this week. I mean, in something the other night, I was reading, we had a kind of a rating of strength of field, and the only three tournaments that had stronger field were the U.S. Open, the PGA Championship, and the Players' Championship. And so this, and somebody called me the other day and said, "You're a major." And I said, no, we're not a major, but we could be the fifth major, the sixth major. But, yeah, we're really excited about what's happening out in Los Angeles Country Club right now. And we know that probably somebody will be in our field that wins that event.
That's right. I mean, look, first of all, look at the defending champion of the Travelers, Xander Schauffele, shooting that U.S. Open record, tying 62 in the opening round. How stellar was that?
It was phenomenal. I mean, he's such a good golfer. He's a good person. And I think that's what's most exciting about all this is that Xander and Scotty and Rory and John, I mean, the list goes on and on. And, you know, at the beginning, John wasn't sure if he could play us, if it'd be on his schedule. And I saw him out of Genesis behind the clubhouse. And I hear this voice, Andy. And it's John Rahm. And he said, "I'm playing you." And up until then, I wasn't sure. And I went over, gave him a hug, and I'm like, "Oh, this is great. This is phenomenal." So, you know, throughout the year, the guys are trying to figure out their schedules, which is always a challenge in itself, and you're never quite sure. But, gosh, they have 7 out of the 77. And the reason it's 77 is we'd say 100, but there are, 23 players who can't play on a PGA Tour. They're either not members of the tour, they're either injured, like Will Zalatoris had some surgery, or they're playing on Liz. So there's a combination of 23 that can't be. So of the 77 that are available, we have 70.
Wow, that is unbelievable. You have, as you mentioned, Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, Rory, Justin Thomas, Xander, Patrick Cantlay, Hideki. It goes on and on. Victor Hovland, Cameron Young, Keegan Bradley, Max Homa. I mean, exactly. All the stars will be there. And can you talk a little bit about the Travelers being scheduled the week after the U.S. Open and how the players kind of welcome the fun environment and really being able to play aggressive golf with lots of birdies, although, you know, at the LA Country Club, they've been scoring there as well.
It seems that I always hear that is that it's so hard to get a birdie at the U.S. Open, but I keep watching this for the first 3 days. I don't think they're having a hard time with birdies. And they love to come out to it. They've been supportive from the beginning. And back in 2007 was our first tournament. And in 2005 and 6, as we negotiated the first deal, I cannot tell you how many people said, "Oh, God, you have the worst week in golf. You're the week at the U.S. Open. You're not going to make this work. You're going to fail." And I mean, I just have to hear that one time, and all my competitive juices kick in, and we were not going to fail. we were going to be the best on the PGA Tour. And so Nathan Groob and his tremendous world-class staff and all of our world-class people at Travelers who work on this have worked every year. We never accept the status quo, and we always try to get better. And, you know, last summer, I got to get my timing right, right, last August when the tour announced that there would be four additional designated events. I was right there actually when it was over. I went over and found Jay Monahan and said, we want to be one of those. and we worked hard, and by about November, we had put together the agreement, and we became this designated event that everybody's going to see this year. So, you know, it's about relationships with players, working with the tour, working with everybody to try to make this our sponsors, our fans, and look what's happened. It's just terrific. We're so proud. And what's most important is that, you know, last year we were able to give over $2.5 million to over 125 charitable organizations. This year, Nathan and I have been working really hard to get that up to $3 million and over 125 organizations. So charity is so important. The pride in the community is so important. And you've been a part of this from the beginning, which has been terrific to have your support in. And, you know, I think you're going to see something next week that we've never seen. We've never seen this certainly in Connecticut, but having this kind of a world-class field will be something very, very special.
I have to ask you, Andy, about your thoughts about the proposed merger, you know, between the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and the Saudi Public Investment Fund. What are your thoughts as a sponsor about that merger?
Well, I mean, it's like everybody, right? I mean, certainly the announcement was significant. My gosh. And I get a call 15 minutes before the announcement, and that was it. And you've heard that from a lot of people. And, boy, there are so many unknowns. And actually, from a week ago when it was announced, about a week ago, right, there have been a lot more questions that have come up with all of the congressional issues and the DOJ and the legal issues. And, you know, one thing I can tell you is we're not the PGA Tour. We're one of over 100 title sponsors on all the different tours that the PGA Tour runs. And it's interesting to see what's going on. And I think that they announced that the definitive agreement would be completed by the end of the year. Well, there's a lot of things to happen before that happens. So I think right now it's just wait and see, watch. I thought John Rahm made a very, very interesting comment yesterday. I saw it last night. And he said, hey, listen, you know, we're athletes, and our job is to compete, and we have families, and he's concentrating on his children, which is really wonderful, and his wife, and he's playing golf. And, you know, when I was an athlete back in 1980 in the Olympic team that boycotted the Soviet Union, the Russian Olympics, you know, I had the same attitude. I have to be as good as I can be because that's what I can control. And I just thought John's comments were really well said, and I think most of the players out there are concentrating on playing good golf. And look at the U.S. Open. I think they are really concentrated on playing great golf.
Right.
And I think that we just have to give this some time to flush itself out and see what this agreement looks like. And it's going to take some time.
Well, as a sponsor of a designated event on the PGA Tour, was there ever concern, like prior to this announcement, about the sustainability of the economics of the PGA Tour due to, you know, the increase in prize money and all the other expenses that go into making an elevated event? Was there any concern that they couldn't sustain the economics of it?
No, I mean, as a title sponsor, that's all I can speak of, and is that we pay to be the title sponsor, and we increase that to be a designated event, to be able to have a $20 million purse, right? And the winner gets $3.6 million. You know, last year, the funny aside for a second, is our winner, Xander, I think had a payday of about $1.5 million-ish, $1.6 million. And so, I mean, this year the winner will get $3.6 million. So anyway, so back to the question is, you know, I'm not close enough to the PGA Tour to really speak about their financial standings. I did read what you read about $50 million of legal expenses. And I mean, that's, I don't care who you are as an organization, that's a lot of money. And so, you know, spending that kind of money to conduct your legal proceedings is really significant. So, but no, I never get any hints that there was like a financial issue. But you see that and you say to yourself, boy, that's a lot of money. And so, I trust the leadership at the tour that they're, you know, trying to act in the best interest of golf. But having said that, you know, there's a lot more to happen here, and who knows what this structure is going to look like. That definitive agreement, and we know definitive agreements in the business world, and there's a lot of things that can change in the course to getting to that point. So we'll see. But in the meantime, you know what? The good thing is we can stay focused on our tournament because it does so much good in the community and for charity and the pride of people in the Connecticut area, well, Connecticut and the Connecticut area, in the Northeast region. And we're just excited to be able to continue to deliver on our promise to take care of others as we put on this world-class tournament.
Absolutely. And I know, and I appreciate your honesty on those questions about the merger, you know, coming from a sponsor's perspective.
Yeah.
I hear that Thursday and Friday sessions are sold out. Can people still get tickets for the weekend?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've got tickets. Most of the clubs are sold out in different days, but, I mean, even the grounds passes. I mean, so just to give you an idea of interest, and you know, I'm sure Nathan will call me and say you were wrong with the numbers, but in a typical year at the Travelers Championship, we'll sell $7 million, $7.5 million of sponsorships. This year, we've already surpassed $11 million. And that's why we're so excited, that because all net proceeds from the Travelers Championship go to charity. And so the charity numbers are going up, just like we always fight and work hard to make sure they go up. And I think from that perspective, you know, people can come in, travelerschampionship.com, and go online and buy your tickets. And the beauty of this, I mean, there's a very interesting thing. I was out at the course yesterday, obviously, working with Nathan to take a last-minute look at everything. And it's interesting to see the different venues that we have out there this year. So when somebody buys a grounds pass ticket, they get free parking. And we have, we're one of the only events on the PGA Tour, we can park 10,000 cars within walking distance of the tournament. So it's an easy place to get to. It's an easy place to once you get there, to walk. And then that same grounds ticket gets you into four venues on the course. And the one is the Hartford Healthcare Sports Zone on Sistine Green and 16 Key. Then there's Casamigos, House of Friends. I don't drink tequila, but it's supposed to be great. And Casamigos House of Friends on 9, Stanley Black & Decker Lounge left at Fairway, and Tito's Stillhouse Lounge on 17. So we've got, when you get a grounds ticket, you're getting some significant opportunities at this tournament to watch the best and stay comfortable and have some food to eat.
I love it. And TPC River Highlands, just a great place to watch golf. Andy, thank you so much. Keep up the great work. As you mentioned, 100% of net proceeds are donated to charity each year. I look forward to being up there this week and enjoy the final round of the U.S. Open this afternoon.
Thank you. And we can't thank you enough, Ann. You're a terrific supporter of our tournament and an important person to have with us, broadcasting and such. And you're always welcome. And if we can do anything to help you, let us know. And we're going to have a great week. It's going to be a phenomenal week in Connecticut.
Can't wait. Andy Bassett, thank you so much. Coming up, we'll continue talking U.S. Open golf. Rick Wynn, longtime caddy with lots of fun stories. He's at the L.A. Country Club all week for the U.S. Open. We'll tap into his insight about the course conditions and who may be able to close it out when we come back. But first, let me remind you that many of the world's best golfers will tee it up at the Travelers Championship, June 21st to the 25th. John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, 2022 champion Xander Schauffele, and many more. The Northeast-only PGA Tour event will feature next-level competition, next-level thrills, next-level excitement. For tickets and information, visit TravelersChampionship.com and be sure to catch all the next-level action.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. And as you know, the U.S. Open is wrapping up this afternoon at the Los Angeles Country Club. And joining me now is longtime caddy Rick Wynn. He's caddied on 5 professional tours for the likes of Arnold Palmer, Zach Blair, Wayne Levy, Danny Edwards, just to name a few. And Hey, Rick, thanks for getting up early for us. I know it's 5:40-something in the morning West Coast time. Welcome to Talking Golf.
Morning, Ann. It's looking forward to talking with you.
So local knowledge has been key on this golf course. You know, I talked about how tricky this course plays. You got the sloped fairways, the bunkers, the barrancas, those ditches with the high grass and the sand and the scrub bushes in them. You got the slanted greens. You have the long and really short par threes, the drivable blind par 4-6. I mean, it's really a golf course that constantly challenges your mind. So how crucial is it to have a caddy who, you know, puts in the extra work and knows exactly where the player has to place the ball?
Well, I think it probably gives a level of comfort to the player if they know the guy's done the work. You know, the picking targets on so many blind shots here is probably a very critical part of what's going to happen today, I think. Those number six, the drivable hole, if you've watched it, some of the guys that are challenging the hole, they're walking away, shaking their head, going, gosh, if I just put it in the fairway and, you know, didn't try to be so aggressive, I probably would have had a couple of chances at birdie where, you know, they're making a few bogeys there.
That's right. And if you look at the pin placement on six, it looks like it's in the lower right-hand area of
right. The bunker's going to be there. A lot of guys were hitting that back bunker yesterday. They had no shot. They had to, in fact, chip back toward the tee box if they were going to play it and have a chance of making par. So, yeah, that's going to be, I think, a cute little pin for them.
Cute. Well, I mean, don't you think it's better for those guys, from what I've seen all week, not to go for the green because it's so hard to you know, get the ball to just stop on the green with the bunker behind it?
Yeah, and the crazy thing is any ball that's hitting left of the pin and into that hill, it's coming backwards, and it's getting right against these big old clumps of fescue where guys are stymied. It's like, you know, it's kind of funny, actually. I'm going, okay, he gets a little backspin, ball backs up. Now you probably need a weed whacker to get it just to move it 10 feet.
So what do you think of this golf course overall as a U.S. Open course?
It's pretty fair. You got to be patient. I think if you watch Ricky and the guys, you know, Rory, when they played it, giving themselves, you know, more or less a 15 or 25 footer, you know, not really challenging some of those corner pins, which they had a bunch of yesterday. They're going to make some 30 footers. Boy, when you get short side and everything, you know, you can see the look on their face. They just know, man, I'm going to have to make a 25 footer for par. And they're just frustrated.
Yeah, I mean, they've been making some long bombs to save par for sure. And, you know, when you and I spoke earlier this week in the media room at the Los Angeles Country Club, Ricky Fowler was one of your picks to win. So what made you pick Ricky before the championship even started?
Well, Ricky, you know, Ricky's been playing good all summer. His, you know, when you watch him, he's not, he hasn't been, you know, having the big ups and downs that sometimes he has when he's in a hunt, you know, be going along and all of a sudden make a couple numbers, you know, double bogeys. Bogeys are okay, I think. You know, if you've watched him, he's made bogeys and then he's made a nice bounce back birdie right after it. He's not letting that, you know, that bogey just destroy him. Like yesterday, I believe he was, you know, like on the par five, he hit it down in the right. On number, I believe it was number eight, he hit it and it ran into near the barranca. And, you know, he just took his medicine. He got it out there. He made par. You know, when you know walking out of it, you go, God, this is my birdie hole. Why did I not just, you know, rip it down the left side and then take all the trouble out of play?
I know. He must be kicking himself, though, that he, you know, bogeyed the 18th. He missed that short putt, you know, par save. So,
You know, I was out there at 18 and about 20 minutes when them guys were coming down 16, a really good cloud cover came in and it went from, okay, it was good, clear afternoon where everybody was nice and sunny. Those last couple groups, unfortunately, it was pitch dark. I mean, when he finished 18, I was standing there right behind the grandstands and I'm looking around and I could barely see anything. It was dark, and so I give him a little bit on that one. It was crazy.
Yeah, well, yesterday the final pairing went out at, what, 6:40 Eastern. Today the final pairing is going out at 5:30 Eastern time, 2:30 your time. And Ricky Fowler and Wyndham Clark, they're tied for the lead at 10 under. Rory McIlroy, one back. Scottie Scheffler, three back. And what about his eagle on that tough par 4, 17th? I mean, that was unbelievable.
Yeah, he got a pretty good kick there. I saw that ball hitting the fringe, and then it just died perfect. And it was pretty exciting. His last two holes, I mean, he saved his whole round there with the last two holes. You know, you get over that 30-footer, and he has a knack for making 30-footers. We talked about that a couple days ago. You know, Scottie's one of those guys where, you know, 5, 6, 7 feet, you know, sure, he's going to make some putts. But, boy, he's tough. He's like Jordan Spieth was when Jordan ran that one year where he made everything, where he's making it from 25, 35 feet. Scottie's that type of guy. He loves those 30-footers. He holds out. Seems like every tournament he holds out some shot. That's why he plays.
That's right. Eagle on that par 4, 17th from about 198 yards, and then he dropped a 22-footer for birdie to finish out on 18. So he shot a 268. He's at 7 under. He's only 3 shots back. So with this leaderboard, who do you think's gonna close it out today?
I'm gonna stay with Ricky.
Okay.
I thought from the beginning. I mean, if you watch his temperament, he's, you know, him and Ricky, that you watch him and they never look panicked. They talk out of little situations. They just check it out. They try to get to a spot, and they're sticking to a game plan, it looks like. I mean, Xander's a little bit back. He had a really tough start.
Yeah, he did.
And, man, he hung in there. He made adjustments, which, you know, the team has proven, you know, okay, we're not going to give anything away. We're going to keep close. You know, if he can get hot, which he's really a streak player, in the middle of the round, he made some birdies, got back into it. Clark has been playing such good golf. He looks confident out there. Toward the end, it got a little, not shaky, but it wasn't the golf he was playing early in the round where he was just sitting there. He was a technician. So, and if he can get back on that, it's going to be a good shootout.
It's going to be so compelling, for sure. I know you caddied for a lot of different players on 5 different professional tours, but you have to share the story of the first time you caddied for the great Arnold Palmer.
Oh, gosh. That was it was a special treat. It was, you know, he was doing a Arnold Palmer Award at La Costa. I didn't have any bag for the Bob Hope that year. And so I walked in. I said, I'm going to go up and check and see if he's got somebody for the, you know, for the early tournaments. He usually played in 3 or 4 tournaments on the West Coast. He played Pebble Beach. He always played the Bob Hope. So I went over there in the afternoon. He was doing that, and I was waiting in the wings. And an older gentleman, Doc Giffen, who was his manager, was standing there, and I didn't know who he was. And I asked him, I said, do you know when Mr. Palmer's going to be finished? He goes, well, he's got about 20 minutes. What can you help? What does he need? You know, what do you need with him? He goes, well, I think I can caddy for him. I'd love to work for him. I think I could do a good job for him. He says, you do? I said, well, hang around. He's going to be done in about 15 minutes. Arnold finished. He walked over. Doc goes, Arnold, this young man would like to talk to you. Oh, gosh, I'm starting to panic now. I'm going, here we go. He says, yes, what can I do for you? He says, Arnold, if you don't have anybody for the Bob Hope, I'd love to work for you. He goes, okay, well, write down your number and we'll see. Sunday night before the tournament, I hadn't heard anything, so I'm going, okay, I'm off this week. I get a phone call. I go, hello, this is Arnold Palmer, and I started laughing. I thought it was my buddy Dan, and I hung up the phone. But a minute later, phone rings again. He says, don't hang up. This is Arnold Palmer. So we go, yes, sir. Sorry, Mr. Palmer. He goes, would you still like to work for me? I go, absolutely. He says, meet me 8 o'clock tomorrow morning at La Quinta Country Club, and we'll go on from there. So I went down to the airport, got a car, scrambled like crazy, got down there, left at 6 in the morning, got over to La Quinta. He drove in. He gets up out of the car. He goes, you know, how you doing? I says, okay, let's get down. Let's sort things out. Opens his trunk to the car. He's got 3 sets of clubs in there. He goes, okay. He says, okay, how much did you make last year? He says, oh, who do you work for? And I told him. He says, well, I'm going to pay you this. He says, okay. And then when we go out there, You do your job. We talk about the numbers. We decide on a shot. I hit the shot. Good, bad, or indifferent. It's on me. I said, I don't blame you. You don't blame me. It's just golf. And he says, third and foremost, he goes, I'm just a golfer. You're just my caddy. We get no special favors. He says, can you live with that? I go, absolutely. Let's go to work.
Wow. I love that. That was Arnold Palmer for sure. I mean, he was every man, just incredible. And Doc Giffen, you mentioned his assistant, who's in his 90s, by the way. Doc's an incredible guy. He made it possible for me to go and visit Arnold Palmer in Latrobe after the U.S. Open at Oakmont in 2016. And boy, I had the honor of sitting down with Arnie in June. You know, he was ailing then, and just a few months later, he had passed. But I wanted to see Arnie in his environment where he grew up and where he, you know, spent, you know, so much of his time. I had interviewed Arnie in New York and in Orlando, and he was part of the Golf Channel in the early days, obviously. And so Doc just made that possible. So what a great guy, and what a great story, Rick. So, you know, as a caddy out there day in and day out working for a paycheck with these guys, what have you come to appreciate about these professionals more than anything else?
Well, the nice thing is, I think, is, you know, you get a bunch of different personalities out there. The ones that really have the passion, I mean, all the guys love to play golf. They all want to win. They all want to compete. But the fun part is when you get under the gun, you know, there's a small segment of players that, man, it's they want to win the trophy. They want, you know, they play to win. They grind it out. When you get with somebody like that, you know, it doesn't matter whether you make a triple or whatever, and they're fighting back, and they fight back in there. And at the end of the day, when they get done, they say, hey, we did our best. You know, those kind of personalities, when you work for somebody like that, it's good. You know, you see some people, they fight, they yell at each other on the course. And the minute they sign the scorecard, turn it in, they're back to normal people. They're good people. But boy, under the gun, they can get testy.
I'm sure. You like the guys who are calm in good and bad. Hey, Rick, enjoy the final round of the U.S. Open. You have Ricky Fowler and Wyndham Clark tied for the lead at 10 under. That final pairing starts at 5:30 Eastern time. You have Rory McIlroy one behind, Scotty Scheffler three back, and they're paired together, Rory and Scotty. That's going to be incredible. The final round of the U.S. Open should be one for the ages. Thanks, Rick, for joining me. Enjoy the day. Really appreciate you
coming
on.
You have a great day.
My thanks to Rick Wynn, to Andy Bassette of Travelers, to Ed Arzuman in the studio. Talking Golf is brought to you by Travelers. It's better under the umbrella. And by the KPMG Women's PGA Championship taking place this coming week at the historic Baltusrol Royal Golf Club in Springfield, New Jersey. Get your tickets now at kpmgwomenspga.com. Mark Melusis is up next. Have a happy Father's Day, and I look forward to reconnecting with you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Ann LaGorrie.